I'll open the meeting with acknowledgement of country. I'd like to show respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land, the elders past, present, on which the meeting takes place. Apologies of leave of absence. We are all present. Anyone requesting leave of absence?
Oh.
No? Yes. Confirmation of the minutes.
Oh, yes.
Sorry?
Sorry, I'm away. I think it's the 25th to the 28th of this month. Just want to quickly check that.
That's the conference.
Oh, no, I'm going, of course. And there's a conference as well. Yeah, 25th to the 28th of August for a training in Sydney. And when's the conference on? Whatever dates the conference is on for the LGBT
sellers. That's a couple of months away.
Yeah, it's October.
But that'll be noted. Item 4, confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting on the 15th of June. Could I get a mover, please?
I moved.
Had one and a seconder. That motion, all those in favour? Disclosure of interest. Has any councillor got any disclosures? The general manager, have you received from staff?
Nil.
Item 6, we now have a presentation from Mr. Brian Wilkinson, the Chair of Audit Risk and Improvement Committee. I might hand over to you, General Manager. Well, first, welcome, Mr. Wilkinson. And
welcome. How are we all?
Thank you.
Alive. That's good. That's a start. Yes.
So Brian is our chair of the ARIC, and he's, as part of the annual performance review, the chair provides a report back to the council about what's been happening, how the ARIC's been performing. There's an ARIC report at the back end of the business paper, which covers a Word version of the presentation today. I'll hand over to Brian.
Thank you very much. Yeah, morning all. I hope all is well in the realms of Rouse. And thank you for the opportunity to have a communication with you today. I will be communicating to you about what's on the agenda on your pages 302 through to 305. So that's the performance review report of the ARIC for the period ending 30th of June 2022. The report is basically in three parts, and I'll take you through that as we go. But the first part is the role of the ARIC. Second part is how we undertake that role, and thirdly about the outcomes and the performance of the committee. So, starting on page 302, there's a list of our reference to our charter and also what the Local Government Act requires of ARICs. And what that is in regard to keeping under review things like compliance, risk management, fraud control, financial management, etc. I'm sure you're all familiar with those terms and the other ones that are the role of ARIC. And what we need to focus on is the processes that are involved in those areas that we need to keep under review, and also the effectiveness of the processes in place around those items, and also importantly to try and work with staff and the council in regard to improvements in the areas that we do keep under review. So the second part is how we go about that, and this starts on probably the halfway down page 303. Some comments that I need to make is that one of the important things we try to do is to form an effective relationship with the staff and also the internal auditors and external auditors, because they're all inputs to our process. As mentioned in the report there on page 303, we guide our operations by a schedule of reporting. So we have a list of items that relate to all those items that we need to keep under review, and request staff at the various meetings throughout the year to provide reports on issues relating to those matters, as well receive the internal audit reports and are guided by the charter. And also we need to recognise the capacity of people to respond, particularly the staff to respond to items that are listed for improvement through internal audits or the external audit process, or items that the committee themselves raise. And the other thing we need to focus on is actually making sure, or trying to make sure, that identified improvements are completed and satisfactory. As you'd be aware, trying to change things, sometimes it seems easy when you get a report, get a recommendation from the external auditor or the internal auditor and say, ABC, sounds easy, we'll just fix that. Once you start to improve items, there's a lot of tentacles that go out from there, and sometimes it's not easy for staff to just click the fingers or do a report and have it have the issue completed. And in that regard, what we try to do as a committee is to ensure that when we get advice that action has been taken, that we believe it's proper action that's going to get an effective outcome, not just here you go, we've done this, happy days. We do try to make sure that, and the staff are very cooperative and conscientious about what their role is, and they do report in depth sometimes to us in regard to matters that are subject of improvement. The balance of the committee report from page, halfway down page, or the bottom of page 303, through to the top of 305, goes through what we've looked at and relates back to the items that we need to keep under review. You see in bold print there, you've got the agendas there that we've mentioned in the report there about what we've looked at in regard to compliance, enterprise risk management, fraud control, financial management, governance, the implementation of the strategic plan, delivery program and strategies, the service reviews, the collection of performance management data, and other matters, which includes the internal audit program. So I can't emphasise enough that our role is a connecting role with the staff, and certainly liaising strongly and working with the internal auditors and the external auditors through the Audit Office of New South Wales. Where we go in the future with ARACS, as you'd probably all be aware, there are pending guidelines, which have been pending for quite some time, but pending's a word that keeps going sometimes, but I think it's getting nearer to the end where the new finalised ARIC guidelines will occur. What that is showing to me in those guidelines, that there will be an increasing emphasis on the ARIC role. There'll be more depth of involvement of ARIC in those areas that are asked to be kept under the review, and there will be an increased level of reporting required of ARIC. So ARIC's not going to go away. The committee we have at the moment, we've got myself, Councillor Rob, and Andrew McLeod, who's based in Queensland as well, but Andrew's very experienced in ARIC matters, both through his previous work life and also in being involved in a number of other ARICs in New South Wales and Queensland. So we're confident that we are in a position at Rouse to move forward with the new guidelines, whatever the final cut will be. So we will continue to do that work, and obviously we see our role as increasing. It's just to a lot of extent. Quite happy to take questions from councillors and staff if you've got any in regard to our, hopefully the report outlines what we've done. In summary, we believe we've done what we've been required to do, and we haven't identified areas that we needed to make council, the elected council, particularly aware of. Further comment is, I do believe that at the beginning of the report it says in the charter that that we have to do, or we should do, a report at least once every 2 years to council. It is my view that we should do it annually to keep it more current and to keep that communication going. So I've said what I think I needed to say, so I'm happy to take any questions if anyone has them. Councillor Rob,
a question. You've done too good a job, Mr. Wilkinson.
Hear that? So I was going to say, I don't have a question, but I could make a comment, because, you know, and I'd like to say that working with these guys, they know their stuff,
And we're heading towards a situation where the councillors are going to be downgraded, I guess, and not have a voting role, but they'll still be able to have one councillor as a non-voting sort of attendee. And I hope that if I'm not on Rouse, I hope someone definitely puts their hand up for that, because the army of staff that come and support this committee, the information is incredible. The way it's looked at is a different perspective, and I think it's very important to keep it going. And I'm glad that ARIC's going to be given more power, but with some participation from council laws still. So even though it's not voting. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Councillor Rob.
Any other speakers? Well, just on behalf of council, I'd like to thank you and the committee for what you do. It's much appreciated, and I feel we're in good hands. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I certainly enjoy the role. I know Andrew does, and we appreciate the input from staff and the respect shown in making sure that the processes are moving forward expediently. So thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of the meeting. I won't bother you any longer.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks for that. We appreciate that too.
I'm sure you do, yeah. See you later. Bye-bye.
Councillors, the next item is General Manager's report, but in the agenda we have, for some reason, the Local Government New South Wales Annual Conference submissions ended up in motions. I'd like a motion to be able to bring that forward and put it in with the General Manager's reports. Moved, Councillor Robb. Seconder, Councillor Humphreys. Put that motion. All those in favour? So, councillors, now we'll now move to page 362. Item 17.1 it is. Move to the general managers. Could I get a mover for that? Councillor Rob. Seconder. Gordon. Councillor Rob?
I don't have much to say about this. I've read through these and I thought they were pretty good motions. I think some of it has been briefly mentioned. I was looking through old reports of the LG New South Wales because I prepared one for Lismore to put in, and I did see some bits and pieces. But I believe they sorted out and put them together and merged them and all that sort of thing. But I like these. I think they're good. They're simple. Well, some are complicated, but they're clear. And I'm happy to support all three of them.
Any other councillors? Do you want to make a quick comment?
I think from the staff point of view, we've discussed some of these items before with councillors over time as these issues have cropped up. As you've seen with some of the attachments, we've tried to deal with them as an organisation with the various departments, but so far have been a bit unsuccessful. So this is, we believe, the best way to be able to bring these matters to a head through the upcoming conference.
Just a question. At motion 3, it's that the SAP is amended so the Flood Mitigation Authority is not to seek regulatory approval. I'm just curious if you're aware in Mullumbimby we've got a place called Saltwater Creek, and I guess we have trouble getting in there to clear that out because of their regulations now. Would this be caught by that? From a council point of view, are we a Flood Mitigation Authority in terms of our own land in that sense? We're in our own patch, if you like.
So, my understanding is Byron would be covered under this because Byron hasn't delegated those functions to Rouse. So the general purpose councils within the state that have those responsibilities would get the benefit of this.
Okay, great.
Point of clarity, if I may, just I did speak. So, the chair's going as Rouse. You going as Rouse?
The conference?
Yeah. I was trying to work out on the voting, so we discussed it.
Yeah.
So, we have one vote, don't we? And Richmond Valley has two votes, don't they?
Well, three, yeah.
Okay.
I have registers with Richmond Valley. That's something we need to sort out later.
Yeah, but I've discussed this, I think, with Phil and, sorry. Mr. Rowe. Yeah, sorry, Mr. Rowe. And Are you happy with having two votes? Because going down there representing both organisations?
I don't. It doesn't really worry me. I think everyone's there for the same cause.
Yeah. I just want to make sure. I'm happy to support that. That's what I'm saying. So I just
hadn't crossed my mind, to be honest with you. It's been too much important.
You just have to have one machine in each hand.
Look, if there's a Rouse delegate there and they're not voting, I'm happy for that to be passed.
I'm there as a Byron delegate, but I don't have voting, so I could help you if you need somebody else to press a button. I'm going for Rouse, hopefully.
Sorry?
I'm going for Rouse.
Oh, you're going for Rouse, not for. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All
right.
Same question then. Same question, yeah.
So, through the chair, I believe the councillors who are going is Councillor Robb, Councillor Cogwalder, Councillor Lyon, are you going?
I'm going on behalf of
Byron.
Byron and Byron.
So everyone's going bar Councillor Gordon?
I'm not going.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going, yeah.
Yeah. So with various, either under the general purpose or Rouse, so, yeah. We've got some flexibility there.
So you won't be voting for Ballina?
No.
Okay.
For Rouse.
Oh. Surprise. And how many votes do we get?
One.
Four. Oh, okay. Why do we only get one?
Because it's the size of the council.
Okay. Gonna work that easy on the
Okay. So back onto this item. Has any other debate? Want to write a reply, Councillor Robb? Put that motion and all those in favour. Now, councillors, while we're at the Councillor Cadwallader has also got a notice of motion, but has to leave earlier. So I'd like to bring that forward to debate now, if we can get a mover, please. Councillor Sarah? Seconder? Councillor? Good. I'll put that motion, all those in favour, to bring it forward. Right, Helen? So now we're on notice of motion, submitted by Councillor Cadwallader. Need a mover, please.
Certainly I'll move, but is there a seconder?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Councillor.
Seconder, Councillor Robb. Councillor Cadwallader.
Yes, well, councillors, I brought this to council because of the ongoing concerns in our communities that the deadline of 2024, where forecast demand is predicted to outstrip supply of potable water. And quite seriously, this should ring alarm bells for everybody. The workshop recently certainly brought at home the seriousness of the situation. The Future Water Project 2060 is way behind reasonable schedules. And I don't blame staff for that. I want to be clear about that. I certainly don't blame staff for those delays. The weather has played a part, but to-ing and fro-ing with all options being investigated has been the major roadblock to this. Now we find ourselves in this situation where we may be on permanent water restrictions. Well, we're certainly breathing down the barrel of permanent water restrictions if we don't get a new water source online quickly by 2024. That is if we don't take serious action. Look, we know we can and we know we must do this. We must prioritise investigations to secure a safe, reliable water source. Events of the last few months have set back many projects, and I commend the work of Rouse staff for their work and commitment. Commitment to their business as usual, despite some of them losing their own homes, their workplaces, and being forced to relocate to other work sites. It certainly has been a challenging time for everybody, and then you throw in COVID and flu. It's been very challenging for our workforce. For that, I want to say well done to all the staff, and thank you. You are valued team members and you are very much appreciated. It concerns me that what was purported by some that the Clarence Morton Basin groundwater was going to be the panacea and solve our water woes. But from where I'm looking, that would not appear to be the case, and it's not on track to deliver at all. We all know what water restrictions mean for our community. We've been there before, level 5. There's no level 6. That's when we start evacuating nursing homes and trucking in water. That's what we do know. And we know that all our orthopaedic surgeons were never busier during the drought when we had those severe water restrictions. People were using children's swimming pools, and I was one of them, in the bottom of the shower, catching water and then repurposing the water. It was a dire situation. People couldn't wash out their bins. Councils were fining thousands of dollars to people washing maggots out of bins and things like that. We know the Wilson's River source is out of action. We know that Emigrant Creek, once you cannot pump from Emigrant Creek once it reaches a certain level in a dry spell. And we know that water restrictions, then it starts with alternate days or weeks of water gardens, not just flower gardens, but vegetable gardens, tree plantings, and all those things that mean so much to people's mental health. We know all these things. And it's just one of those things that we have to do something about. It's reality, and we have to move forward as quickly as we can. As a county council responsible for a secure, safe water supply, we need to heed the call for urgency and do all that we can possibly do to investigate and take action to secure the region's water supply beyond 2024. So, councillors, I'm commending the motion to you, and I would ask you to support it because I do believe it is a case of urgency that we do all that we can in order to move on with our investigations to secure secure water supply for our region.
Any other speakers? Seconder?
No, I have a question.
I also have a question to the mover and seconder. Thank you. I'm just wondering, I'm getting queries from people about that timeline as well. And I'm wondering if you'd be happy to embed in the motion that Rouse publishes a clear estimated timeline for each of the processes that it's undergoing, so that there's that level of once we find that out, a level of transparency for people to understand where we're up to with an environmental assessment, where we're up to with the cultural heritage, what, you know, I think to get the community's trust in this process, that level of transparency could be really helpful. And I'm just wondering if you'd be willing to embed something like that.
I'm just looking at, in the staff comments, early December, we're looking at for a workshop. So I'm thinking out of that workshop, I'll just ask the General Manager, Mr. Rudd, if he would just comment on that, whether that would be possible to actually define timelines after that workshop.
So, through the chair, with the current program, there is a series of timelines. They're pretty high level at the moment, based on quarterly. As we go through, and this is the body of work, we don't have all the information at the start. So, what we do is we do a level of investigation that will then tic-tac which direction we go, which then provides greater confidence in terms of some of those timelines. So, we can provide timelines. Some of them will be more accurate and more levels of confidence around them. There'll be others that we believe, okay, at the moment, we believe this is the best information. We'll have a couple of revisions of that as time goes by. So, like I said, we do have that, and as part of that workshop, we can go through, capture those elements in a bit more detail, and if councils are happy with that, then we can start publicating that in, as part of the fact sheets or future water project. But there is a summary with some rough timelines right now that is publicly available.
So is it necessary that we have a point two there? Should we just leave it because it's already available?
So what we can do is I can circulate that to all councils, and we've got the upcoming workshop. If councils believe that's sufficient, great. If not, then an outcome of that workshop can be similar to that.
Yeah, I'm happy.
That way it covers everything.
Have to leave it out there. Yeah, I think, you know, I think most people understand with any strategy, you're always going to have some movable pieces sure. in it, but it just may alleviate some concerns that things are going on behind closed doors that they don't.
100%. We need to be transparent in everything we do. And we have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think if there's concerns there, we need to get the current guidelines out to all councillors and they can pass distribute to those people. Yes. And after the December workshop, because those guidelines are putting out now could change, yes. so that'll need to be updated and then we can go from there with that.
Yes.
My question, comment?
Yes.
I just want to ask, like, you know, I love information and I have no issue with it being public or anything like that, but is there much we can do, this is through to staff, is there much we can do to bring things forward considering we have to wait for such things as the cultural heritage report for the dam, the water testing for the groundwater, all sorts of things, each one is delayed years because of these reports that we have to wait for. Is there anything we can actually do to progress things?
So that's the body of work that we're doing at the moment is identifying, is there some opportunities to run some of these things parallel? The risk of that is that you can spend more money. The process at the moment that we've been taking is do a body of work, learn from that body of work, and then do the next body. The problem with that is that it's very sequential. There's not a lot of opportunity for parallel works. Now, the benefit of that is it's prudent, it's cost effective, but it takes time. The alternative is to bundle some more things together, but there is a risk there that we'll be paying some money and need variations to some contracts because as that new information comes available, we'll have to make changes as part of that body of work. Now, when you make changes in the middle of the contract, you pay a premium associated with that. So that's what we're trying to go through. Okay, here's the timeline. Here's the options that we're looking at. Where do we believe that we can minimise some of those costs associated with that, but also some of the opportunities to call back some time with the information we have? That's the challenge. A lot of this is there's been a lot of work, but until you do spend $500,000, $1 million, you don't know. And groundwater's a perfect example of that. So we don't want to try and drill six bores at the one time and get poor results for the whole six of them. That's the balance that we're trying to deal with here.
Any other speakers? That's a room.
Thanks, Chair. I'm very pleased to support this motion today. As a new councillor, the workshop we attended last month was something of an eye-opener. Of course, we've heard before joining the council how serious the situation was, but to actually go out there and learn that the Wilson's water pumping station, the backup for the dam, is out of action and could be for some time. The dam itself obviously was built to serve a population half the size of what it's serving now, and it's our only real reliable source at the moment. We also learned at the workshop that the bores, that the pilot bore that's being drilled into the Clarence Morton Basin, is not delivering so far as it would hope. And our strategy at the moment, the council's existing strategy, puts so much emphasis on these bores. We have to do the necessary work to find out what the effects of all these planned sources are. We heard also at the workshop that it's unknown at this stage what effect these bores could have on the water table, on the plateau, for example. Could it impact on local agriculture? We need to find out. We need to put the same level of study into every option so people can be aware, so we can be aware before we make further decisions. But this is urgent. It's hard to believe this is probably the wettest year on record for the region, yet we are facing a dire situation in terms of running out of water. It's incredible. And it's also a little embarrassing to think that it has come to this. And it's a bit of an indictment, I think, on previous councils that they have allowed this to happen. That's my opinion. It shouldn't be like this. And I'd like to think that we as a council can really take this forward so that the region doesn't have the threat of running out of water again. I've heard the impact in Ballina in the 1980s when there was, you know, such a shortage then. The motels and businesses couldn't operate. They couldn't take guests because they couldn't have showers. That's how bad it was. We can't do that again. And again, at the workshop, we learned that there was a belief from some former councillors that rainwater tanks would do the trick. I mean, that's just absurd stuff. So it's good, I think, that I think we have a good check of reality now, and that this motion is so important to bring this work forward and to enable the staff to do what needs to be done so we can resolve this, and I'm very happy to support it. Chair.
Yes,
look, thank you, Councillor Cadwallader, for bringing this forward. I think the more information we all have, the better, and how we manage these timelines and what's coming before us, you know, can only be helpful for everyone. I guess I disagree a little bit about some of the points made. Demand management strategies have been incredibly effective in the past, and the reason that we can supply double the amount of people expected is because education has changed the way, and so has technology changed the way that people can use water. And while Councillor Cadwallader talks about how terrible it was to have, you know, to have it to take a shower and use that water to water the garden, I mean, we are still flushing the vast majority of our potable water down the toilet. And that is a travesty that needs to be addressed somewhere along the way in this process. One thing that concerns me about, I guess, our previous and this goes for our council as well, is how well the information, for example, from the last census has been integrated into our forward planning. For example, while it was expected that Lismore would grow, it didn't grow at all in population in between the two censuses. Four houses, I think, was the growth. That comparison, when you look at Ballina and the Byron Shire, well, we've grown way beyond what was projected for our regions, and we've delivered more than what we were supposed to in terms of housing. And I guess there's been extra pressures like Airbnb and other things that have meant that some of our housing stock is there, but we have to also make sure that our strategy is flexible to the changes of where our population is living, and whether a dam in that area, as some people are really in favour of happening, is going to really be what services those coastal communities that are very far away from it. So, yeah, that's just one thing I think, you know, for as a local council, when we're looking at the North Coast Regional Plan, and it's the, what appears to me and to a lot of council staff as well to be very inadequate data in the 2041 strategy, I'm hoping that, you know, Rouse is really looking at the new information that's available post-census and that document as well, and having some input in that as well. But I'm all in favour of the information that Councillor Cadwallader is asking for, so I have no objections at all to the motion in and of itself.
Now, the speakers, I just need to say something. Look, I 100% support the notice of motion, and I think it's a good one. Information will come out in December, and by that time it will give the staff to update what some of these studies are actually occurring. But it's been said around the table, and I don't, this is mainly for the viewers online. Rouse has got a year of water supply, so I don't want anyone thinking that we're going to run out of water. And it's been kind of alluded that we're going to. That is not going to happen in the next 12 months because we have enough in storage now to do that. So if it stops raining, we still have enough water for 12 months. But I understand the urgency. 2024 in 2012 seemed a long way away. 2024, we have 1 year between them. So we need to act, and we need to act very hastily. but we also need to plan so we get a good result out of what we achieve. And it's... Any other speakers? No? Right of reply, Councillor?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chair. There's a few things that have been raised regarding demand management. And yes, we've come a long way with demand management. We've educated our community, and you only have to look in our reports, our water consumption report, which is on page 269, and you can see there from July 20, and it has the figures 20, 21, 22. So in Ballina, 278 versus in 20 to 280. So there hasn't been much of a move, yet our population has grown exponentially. So people are being more conservative with their water use. So demand management education is working, and that's right across the board for Byron, Lismore and Richmond Valley. So yes, that works, and it's good to see, but it's not enough. We know it's not enough because we're going to continue to grow in our population. Previous councils, yes, 30 years ago, Edral was the place where, and geotechnically, the topography of Edral was far superior than Dunoon. That was the place to build a dam for an alternate water source. But, of course, that was knocked out and never proceeded. So this is why we now are considering all options, which include Dunoon, as a possible site. And that would be expanded to places like Nimbin, not reduced. So the supply that would come out of, if a dam was to go ahead, that would actually be expanded to cover Nimbin. That would come online, which, as we know, even during the high rainfall periods we had, they were on water restrictions out at Nimbin. Hard to believe. I mean, we have been absolutely, I guess, very unlucky with the amount of rain that's fallen and what's happened to our communities. But on the flip side of it, we've been lucky because the dam has remained full, and we can't expect it to remain full. A dam that was built in 1953 for 25,000 people, now servicing 110,000, 120,000 people. The numbers just don't add up. It cannot survive as a water source, and we just have to do everything we can to pull out all stops to move forward our studies, so that we can give confidence to our communities that we're not just sitting on our hands hoping it'll keep raining and the water will be there and won't be on water restrictions. I know we've got a year's supply there, and this is not about alarming our community at all. I believe this is just about giving a clear direction to the staff to say, this is urgent. We can't afford to waste any more time, that we do need to push this through as quickly as we can. Take no shortcuts. Do the studies thoroughly, but let's really get on with the job and start to give the community confidence that we're actually doing that. So thanks, councillors. I commend the motion to you.
Can I just do a clarification? For councillors.
Maybe you need to.
Just a clarification of councillors. Rouse doesn't supply all water water to the entire region. So there is a number of individual supplies that each council has. So there's Mullumbimby, there's Nimbin, Casino, and then there's Waldale with Marram Creek. Each of those areas are going through their own water security studies and identifying, because they've got water security issues going forward as well. So there is a lot of uncertainty when it comes to water security. So there's no definite decisions in terms of Nimbin and what they're going to do with the others. Everyone's going through that process. And I just want to clarify, because people might think that that's a decision that's been made. It hasn't.
Oh, no, I wasn't alluding to that, but I was just saying the possibility's there.
All right, we've had our right of reply. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? Unanimous?
Thank you, councillors.
Well, councillors, now we're on page 7, I believe, 8.1. Oh, sorry, page 8. Get a mover, please. Gordon, seconder. Councillor Ryan. Councillor Gordon.
Can I reserve the right fees, Mr Chair? I think it's pretty self-explanatory, the recommendation.
Councillor Lyon, second.
No.
Any other speakers?
Yeah.
Councillor Cadwell.
I'd just like to say that the results are far better than I thought they would be. It's very pleasing, and I really want to thank staff. I'm just looking here now that much work has been undertaken on our insurance claim, assessing grant funding, availability and accounting for assets lost or damaged in events. So thank you to everybody. And the actual capital income exceeded forecast due to 1.6 million grant funds being received, which was very welcome. And I've got notes here to chew with. Operating expense is 2% below forecast and is due to small labour savings. I'm wondering, is that because we've got a shortage of labour too?
Through the chair, correct.
Yeah, it's across the board, the labour shortage. Yeah, I know in Ballina we've got 17 vacancies in our engineering department, truck drivers, Mara, everybody. So I thought that might be the case. Oh, yes, the levy. I'm looking at the flood reporting unit has recorded a preliminary operating loss of 1.789 million, and that's because of the small levy. And the exclusion of this cost reduces the loss of approximately 1.406 million. Where is this at now with Dewsbury City Council regarding the levy? We've been able to move forward with any.
Through the chair, no, it's still where it was previously. There's a number of things happening, obviously, within the region with the Reconstruction Corporation, the CSI review, as well as that we've made our position knowing that we believe that state needs to take a stronger stance. So we're waiting to see that, but we're at the same time also progressing the review, the strategic review of flood mitigation. So there's a number of things happening, but there's nothing has changed.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm just learning how to write with my pen on my notes on there. So, no, I didn't get a hard copy paper. So, yes, I guess I was looking at on page 28, the Capital Works Program, and I've highlighted the Future Water Program. Groundwater, 88% of the budget's now been consumed. And I'm expecting we'll get a report soon on how that's going.
Correct.
And then very little thereafter. So, Tiagra, there's been nothing there. So thank you, that's all I've got.
Councillor Rob.
Thank you, Mr Chair. Just I have a bit of an issue with carry forwards in the sense that if the money's allocated, I think it should be spent unforeseen circumstances, obviously getting tradies and everything. But I note, like on page 29, we've only done 33% of the budget of works. That's 18 million plus that was allocated in the last financial year, not used. And then on the next page, you can see that, you know, there's only been, of the completed works, there's been 88% complete. That's a better figure. So my concern is, how the budgeting works for the next financial year. So, if this is a carry forward, that means whatever was put last year just automatically goes forward, is my understanding, plus whatever is expected to be done in the next financial year. Is there an adjustment to reduce the next financial year's budget, or is it going to be another massive chunk of money allocated that won't be gotten to, if that's the correct word to use? So this, you know, like, I guess if you budget for something and don't get there, you're over budgeting, is what I'm saying. Instead of over budgeting and locking up $18 million that again, allowing for not having tradies, is there a way to adjust that so we don't have so much tied up that isn't being used?
Can I just say that sometimes it's not over budgeting?
No, that's what
internal I'm saying. Internal factors like floods and droughts.
Yeah, not getting tradies.
That they really affect works.
Yeah.
Budgets.
So that's a massive one. So I'm just trying to find out. I'm asking if there's a way to not just carry forward the money and just not tie up all the money. So, for example, the previous motion, we might need to do something urgently and we won't have any funds available.
So through the chair, there's a couple of things there. There's only a limited amount of capacity in organisations of what they can deliver. So when you do have carry forwards, we then have to rationalise and reprioritise what we've already got scheduled within that future year. So it's not, here's $18 million of work on top of already a $15 million program. No organisation can do that unless they dramatically increase resourcing to offset that. So there's a couple of mechanisms we do. We can capture that early as part of the budgeting process before we present to council the IPNR framework for the upcoming year and make some adjustments in terms of having a reduced program because we know there'll be some carryforwards. There was a little bit of that this year because we'd already gone through the flood. We knew there were going to be impacts. We just didn't know how much. So we had already reduced some of that. The other part that we have and the other mechanism is through the quarterly budget reviews, where once this has been adopted or if it is adopted, we then also rationalise some of the projects and reprioritise them to say, okay, based on risk, it needs to happen this year or no, we're willing to push that to a year or two or three or not do it at all. So there is those processes that happen behind, and that's what we present as part of the reports to the council, some of that rationale. So you'll see some that there will be no carry forwards at all because we believe from a risk management point of view, we can revisit that in more than 12 months, 2-3 years' time. So it's not perfect, and as we said when we presented the draft IPNR framework to councillors early this year, there's going to be a couple of adjustments, particularly through the QBR process, to reflect that. On top of that, we've got a scale of projects. We've got two major projects between Future Water and St Helena where there's a lot of money tied up. And any delays in associated with them have large dollar values. And there's others where there's a large volume of projects, but quite smaller dollars associated with them. And that's why you'll see on page 17, there's two charts there. One is excluding those because they're quite lumpy projects. St. Helene is a classic of that, where a couple of month delay can be several million dollars in terms of payments to the contractor. So the contract's late, it's just there's conditions on site that's slowing things down, which has an impact on the cash flow. So we try to provide that as the commentary as part of these reports so councils are aware. It's a different story. The project's budgeted for, but there's been no works at all commenced. That's a very different story because it's why hasn't that? And that should be the conversation councils are having with staff and myself to say, well, you've asked for the money. It was approved. What's going on?
So just a follow-up on the main. So will we see that come through in the QBRS to address all those concerns?
Correct. So as we said before, we're not going to have them covered in the first QBRS. There's going to be a couple that we'll need to tidy up as we reprioritise. The other part for us is the level of uncertainty between grants and things like that as part of the flood recovery. That has an impact, obviously, on some of the prioritisation of the projects as well. Because we, as you would have seen in the report, the flood fund does not have a huge amount of money. It's quite sick in terms of the funds in it at the moment. If we get some of those funds that have come through, that allows us to prioritise some of those works.
Thank you.
That's all right.
excuse me. Just a couple of queries. One's a follow-up on that line of questioning. So as an example, with $18 million there in the carry-forwards, some of that will sit inside the 2022-23 budget. Those that you deem won't be delivered in that year, they may sit in the software behind in terms of forward projections, but in terms of our reporting financially, IPR and all that, it just falls away if it's not going to be delivered next year.
So there's a couple of things there. Some where it's a better number cash flow to say, okay, we've got $1 million project, but it's actually going to be done in 2 years. There'll be some that'll have some of the money carried forward to and others forward. There's others where we've deemed...
Do we have two columns then? We've got a 2022-23 carried forward and then a future years carried forward, or does it...
In the system we do, but not in this report.
That's what I mean. So it does drop away in terms of the reporting.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
Because at the moment, this report is only looking at the carry forwards, yep. Not the long-term financial plan, which is picking up all that detail.
No, that's great. Second question, just in relation to the depreciation figure, there was like an extra million there that we didn't anticipate based on assets being needing to be renewed earlier than we anticipated. Is that a one-off, or are we anticipating this is a trend where our assets are going to depreciate more quickly than we thought?
I'll pass it over through the chair. Yeah.
Thanks, councillors. In relation to the increased or accelerated depreciation there, the books that we've got on the useful life of the asset, which brings it, in an orderly fashion towards its end of life. Our capital works program has brought those at end of life forward. So what we then need is accelerate the remaining depreciation amount over a shorter period of time, which has increased the cost per annum, is essentially what's happened. What the commentary says is that we were aware of that mid-year, but we didn't make that adjustment because we were already started and through a process of a revaluation. So rather than just doing it in two steps, non-cash, we held that there, and then in the end of the year we've reported both movements, but we're just doing one set of journals to finish off the financial year and for the audit process, rather than bringing that through in an earlier period and then having a revaluation after that. So the outcomes of that revaluation and the audit life will now start to cascade through the long-term financial plan as we look at any other adjustments to the plan for the capital works based on those new depreciation thresholds and our assessment of the real life experience of that asset, and see whether or not we need to make any specific adjustments.
Great. Thank you.
The other thing with carryovers with works, once councillors could get a lot of contractors to do the job, now you can't get contractors. The other thing is you pay a real premium for them.
Yes.
So, yeah, the goalposts have moved a little bit in carryovers. Councillor?
Oh, thanks, Chair. I just had a question around the major projects as well, pages 24 and 25. The indirect potable reuse investigations, and on 25, the direct potable reuse pilot scheme. I was just interested to know a bit more about those two and how they differ.
Yep.
What's happening? Manager.
So indirect potable reuse is one of the options as part of the future water where we capture recycled water that has been treated, put it in an existing storage area, e.g. might be Emigrant Creek or a river, and then re-extract that, treat it as part of the drinking water. Direct potable reuse is where it's actually treated to drinking water standards straight away and put straight into the system. So as part of the future water strategy, there is a number of options of looking at both of them. There was also trying to get a pilot plant over the line as part of that. So unfortunately, we ran out of time at the last workshop where we've got a very detailed presentation to go through councils to provide everyone an update of where we're at with that, our next steps, as well as the feedback that we've got from the regulators as part of their works to date.
Thanks.
Just a question on that. Isn't direct potable water illegal still?
So it's not illegal, it's just that, through the chair, that there's no licence schemes within New South Wales.
So follow-up question. What will it take to suspend spending on direct potable water until there is an ability to actually use it? Because I find this absurd to spend any money on direct potable water when you can't drink it.
So, through the chair, I'd recommend to wait until we have that workshop where councils are brought up evenly, everyone with the background of how we've got to where we are, what we've learnt to date, and what we're proposing as the next steps. And I think that's the opportunity then to have a discussion of Does councillors believe that that's prudent expenditure? What's the value and the benefits of doing those bodies of work? And do we want to do that scale, larger scale, pare it back, et cetera? There's a whole range of detail there. And that's what that workshop's all about to go through.
And just one final quickly. Can that include reference to the condition on the DA for Peridenia to have direct potable water? Because it's something I want to bring up for Lismore. Because I think putting conditions on any DA that you can't comply with is irrational. So can that be in that briefing?
So through the chair, there will be a discussion because that was where there was a potential for a pilot plant for this, that we're investigating, and we've got some further information there. So there's quite a lot of detail when it comes to that workshop, and that's why we made the call last one that we just didn't have sufficient time, and it was a very long day. So yeah, that's the first one off the list at the next workshop.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Just a follow-up question on that. Doesn't one influence the other in the sense that it's not currently, there's no authorised usage in that sense in New South Wales yet, but the investigations that we're doing, wouldn't that influence the ability to actually do that?
Potentially, and that was where some of the discussion previously. That being said, there's been some movements also within the sector as well, and that's where we want to take that opportunity to bring councils up to speed with what's happening within the opportunities within our region, because our region is a little bit unique compared to other regions as well, and what some of the regulators' views and thoughts are as well.
Right.
So.
Any other speakers?
No, I'm happy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Put that motion in. All those in favour? Carried. And then point two, page 31, retail water bad debt write-off. Could I get a mover, please?
Yes, I'm happy.
Councillor Rob.
Happy to second.
Councillor McGuire. Second. Councillor Rob moved. Councillor Rob.
Yeah, just quickly, obviously I'll support it because they're one's a bankruptcy, but the other ones, I just want to ask, I don't know how to pronounce that term. Is it cyber or civil? The AI program that we use to, how do you pronounce that? Cyber. So I see it's an AI program, so you'd think it would work. So why is it causing us these misreadings? And if it seems to be a problem with more than one, are we going to keep using that or are we going to change to something that actually works?
So, through the chair, there is a firmware issue, and we've received an update to that. So, the cyber unit is part of the water meter that registers the consumption. So, it is being addressed longer term as part of the smart metering program. So, there is a program, and there's a report coming up a bit later in terms of backflow. So we have a project to address backflow and smart metering for our retail customers, and that will replace those units because they are coming up to their end of life as well.
Yeah, just one follow-up on that. Is there potential for a lot more write-offs to come through because of this system? Because I would assume it's on every meter.
I'll have to refer to the team if we've updated the firmware.
Thank you, through the chair. I would hope not. No. Again, what we've done, we don't have a history of this, and this is a small number relative to the overall customer base that we're actually deciding to bring through to council for resolution. We've also adjusted our internal processes where we have a nil read or a read to do a physical inspection of the actual meter. So the cyber will just allow us our meter reader to read it electronically in a drive-pass sense, but where we get a nil read, our action is to actually verify that by a physical sighting of each meter. So it should bring us to an attention that the meter's not working a lot quicker, and we can resolve from there. So I wouldn't say that we should have more write-offs.
Yeah, and there's one more question, sorry. Is there a backup sort of or analog system that will, so can we determine if there's actually water going through or not?
Yes, we do. The meter is the mechanism on which the debt occurs. So it's the reading of the meter. The cyber process is really just to get it to the software, the intermediary bit that turns it into an invoice. So we confirm the meter is working and we bill what's in the meter. That's the question.
Thank you.
What I'm hearing is that this is because of the age of the infrastructure, the sidewalk, or is it the supplier? I mean, is there a comeback at the supplier for this sort of thing?
It was a firmware problem that's within the unit. So it's not an age issue. It's just I made that comment that we are addressing this longer term because those units are coming up for replacement, but it's not an age-based problem.
Right, so it was technology.
Correct.
And there is no comeback with the supplier. Or it's our technology that's let us down.
It's our system that we buy for a third party, which is the manufacturer, who we've contacted them and that provide us the details. There was a known problem that we've now addressed.
Is there any compensation?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
I'd have to take that on notice and look into it.
Amounts, at least.
Look, I'd have to take that on notice and I'm doing a bit more research here. Again, the purpose of the report is more to allow us to deal with our customer and we'd have to take another assessment as to what our rights or obligations might be.
So, I mean, happy to support this, but then we should be trying to claim it back.
We'll take that on happy to take that on notice and make some investigation.
You'll get back to us in a minute.
Do we need to have that as part of the promotion or anything?
That's up to councillors. We normally take it on notice and provide a feedback once we've got that information.
Other speakers? Councillor Rob, write a reply. That motion and all those in favour? Harry?
He nodded.
I take that as a nod as a head down there.
Have a nod.
Yeah. Moving?
Yep.
Second.
Page 33, 8.3. Councillor?
Sorry, have I jumped on?
8.3.
Sorry.
Now, happy to move it?
Sure. Yeah, okay. But I'd really like to move the next one.
We'll do one at a time.
I need to speak.
You're right.
Right. You've got to concentrate on getting in there first.
Councillor Rob as seconder on page 33, 8.3. You're right.
All good.
Any other speakers? You like the closure move?
No, it's all good.
I'll put that motion in all those in favour. Carry. 9.1. Yes.
I'm happy to move this one.
Seconder. Councillor Lyon.
Councillors, as I alluded to earlier, for me, I think our focus on demand management, no matter what your opinion is about how we address our future water strategy, this has to be a key component of it. There are some things that I'm not, I guess, that I see that I think could be improved in this document, but overall, it's quite a good document. My concern is actually with the public exhibition period for this. At present, it's only just over 2 weeks, which doesn't line up with the 28 days, for example, on the code and an invitation for submissions of 42 days that we approved in June. It seems below any normal kind of strategic requirements for us. We have a minimum 3 weeks, or it's usually 28 days. So I'm just wondering if there's room for us, or I guess wanted to ask staff if there was any particular reason why we'd have such a short exhibition period.
So, yeah, through the chair, a couple of things. There is no statutory requirement for us to place this on public exhibit. We have historically placed on public exhibit to get feedback and things like that. Secondly, due to the floods, we are behind schedule in terms of delivering this. This was aimed at coming to effect the 1st of July, and we're in August now. We were impacted with the ability to finalise a consultation with our constituent councils because obviously they were significantly impacted. So what we're trying to do is strike a bit of a balance of still putting on public exhibit and getting some feedback, but at the same time trying to have a plan that we can utilise now, because we don't actually have our previous plan had finished last financial year, and this is now coming in. So There is nothing to stop council to increase that date. That's completely up to council. It's just being mindful that if there's feedback, comments and things like that, it'll just delay the implementation of the plan.
Well, just on that, it says it has to come to the council meeting in October, which is the 19th of October, and the public exhibition finishes on the 9th of September. So even if we extended it 2 weeks, it should still give ample time to then report it up. Why would there be a delay in that context?
So a couple of things. By the time, what we find is a lot of people will provide feedback the day it closes. So it's then time for staff to be able to get that feedback, make any proposed changes to the document that's required, and then get it prepared for the business paper, which the business paper process actually starts a month before we issue the business paper. So because councillors get the business paper a week before the meeting, so when you take those steps back, there's a fair bit of work that happens leading up. So that's the, anything is possible, but it's just providing a process to allow staff to have an informed review of any feedback that we receive and to be able to provide those comments and any changes that we have identified as part of that process to say, oh, that's a great idea, or correct, that's a mistake that needs to be addressed.
Just that answer the question.
I still think an extra week would pay it.
If it was extended for 2 weeks, that would take it to the 23rd of September. I'm not sure of the meeting date. Is anyone?
But if we made it for 28 days, that would take it to the 19th of September. So to take it from the 22nd of August to the 19th of September.
It's 30 days to the meeting or 23 days to the agenda is due, which is 3 weeks and 2 days. So, I guess it's up to us to figure it out after we do that.
So, like I said, it depends on the volume of feedback. If we get very minimal feedback, not a problem. If we receive substantial feedback, there is a risk that we won't have sufficient time to be able to do that. So we'll either
do it as long as you can.
When it comes to these things, you never know what feedback. That's why we place it out. We've made a decision historically to, majority of water utilities don't put these on public exhibits. They're an operational document. They're a technical document that's created. That's why we have consultants and things like that to do the work. And we bring them to council to adopt and get on with the business. We've historically, and based with the feedback we got through the Future Water, we do try to present them to the community and get genuine feedback. But like I said, you just never know. Zero comments or 1,000.
Councillor Cadwallon.
Yes, look, I don't support extending it at all. We are behind, and this is all part of the Future Water Strategy 26, demand management. I think it's a good document. I think it addresses everything we've been talking about over and over again. And we are making headway. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't have to be on exhibition, but we are putting it on exhibition to be transparent and open. But timing's everything. We talked about that earlier today. So I don't support extending that period of time any further at this point. So they're all the reasons that I've already pointed out earlier today.
Could I ask a question? Thank you. For you to the general manager, would it be appropriate to make a notation if we don't extend it, explaining that it's not usual, like the wording, explaining that it's not usual, but it's something that we like to do? I actually personally wouldn't mind extending it. I understand the confines for the staff, even if it was a week. And I guess the community don't understand statutory regulations, and they just assume that it would be 28 days. So I wouldn't mind extending it for 1 week. However, if we don't, is it appropriate to put a notation there so that the community do understand right at the onset that what's happening?
I just want to clarify. I don't have a concern or a problem from management's point of view to extend. I just want to provide councillors there could be a risk depending on if we do get volumes of submissions, that just makes, it cuts down our time to be able to respond accordingly and things like that. So we have a couple options of even having it as a late report and things like that. So There is options, so I want councillors to be aware of that, but at the same time, I just want to make sure that everyone's aware too that why that the logic was behind.
Absolutely, thank you.
Well, as the mover, can I suggest that maybe we reach a bit of a compromise there and just move it to the Monday the 13th? So that gives that extra weekend period, which we know is often the only time that people can do it, to the close of business on that Monday the 13th. It's only a few extra days, less than a week. But it does mean that it's 21 days, and that's, I think, people would feel more comfortable. It's not the full 28, but it still leaves staff enough time, I think, to respond and for it not to need to come in, hopefully, as a late report. But for people, for as much as all of staff and Rouse and councils have been under pressure, so have our community, and given the level of community interest in this, I think it's, you know, pertinent that we respond accordingly and allow enough time for people to have a look at it, because they're under a lot of pressure as well.
And if you extend it that weekend, the staff aren't going to be doing reports on the weekend. So, so you want to...
I'd like to move that we change date there in point one from to the 9th of September to close of business on Monday the 13th.
12th.
The 12th. Oh, sorry. 12th. Yeah, there you go.
That's only another 3 days, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, I can leave with that. Thank you, I appreciate it.
So, any other speakers?
Did you want to add something in there about the reason that it's not the full 28 days? That's for.
Did you want to suggest some wording for it? I mean, I think for me, that's something I can think staff can.
Yeah. I added to that, like, certainly leave it in staff's hands, but I think it also should be stipulated gently that no late submissions will be considered.
And that we're not required to put it on a submission, but we are.
I think that's nice.
So we can put that wording on our website when we publish it. So what we normally do is we've got a dedicated spot for any of those documents that are out for exhibit and that, and we can put some descriptions there to cover this conversation.
I think it'd be worse if it has to come to council as a late report.
I agree.
That would be worse, and that's why I wasn't happy to extend.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that.
That's not on.
Yeah.
Councillor Rob.
Yeah, sorry, just listening to all that. I just want to see in the education part of that program some focus on educating people that tanks are not a alternative to water supply, because I keep hearing out there that if we have tanks, we don't need a dam, for example. But if the dam dries out, so will the tanks. So I just want that as part of the education program to let people understand that if we're going to run out of the dam water, you're not going to have tank water either. So because that'll run out long before the dam runs out, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think people realize. I think they think it's an alternative. So hopefully that can be incorporated into the education program about getting tanks.
Perhaps you can write a submission now.
Sorry?
Perhaps you can write a submission so that it gets included. Yeah.
At times. I'm going to just put a motion on it.
There's no doubt there will be some feedback.
Yeah.
We get heaps of people say, oh, if you use tanks, we don't need another dam. Mm-hmm. So,
I'd be very, through the chair, very surprised we wouldn't receive a submission on tanks, and would be providing, there's extensive information that we've provided over the years on rainwater tanks, what their purposes are, what they can do and what they don't do. So if we do get a submission on that, we'll be providing a staff response in that detail.
And just one question on that, actually. Is it Rouse's position not to support tanks because you can't legally drink from them? Is that the issue, because of the risks of contaminated supply?
So, through the chair, rainwater tanks that we've looked at historically are from a demand point of view, e.g. they take some water away from the non-potable uses within the household for flushing, garden use and things like that. When it comes to rainwater tanks for drinking water purposes, New South Wales Health has a lot of guidelines and information about their recommendations of if there is town water available to utilise that and not rainwater tanks. Now, there is a number of communities in Australia who don't have access to town water, so they rely on rainwater tanks. However, there is a lot of work that they need to do to ensure that those water is safe to drink. And so there is, like I said, there's a lot of background information that we've gone through with the previous term of council in particular because I was at a lot of those briefings. But we can, like I said, if we do receive a submission, we can cover off that in the staff comment.
Any other speakers? Final reply, Councillor?
Yeah, thank you. I think it's a valuable discussion to have. And on Councillor Big Rob's comment, you know, perhaps there really needs to be an FAQ built into that so that, you know, while people who were in the last council or, you know, it gets brought up time and time again. Well, if it gets brought up time and time again, let's have that information as a page, as a part of the education, so that people understand what they do and don't do. And that's just an example of a bit of tweaking that can happen to improve this document overall. We are left with these documents for years at a time. So spending a little bit of extra time, you know, improving them and making them something that we're really proud of, I think is worth doing. And while I would have preferred 28 days, I'm happy to live with 21. So that we can, you know, move forward cohesively and give people just that extra, I guess, weekend, if they need it to get a submission if they so require. Thanks.
Okay. Put that motion and all those in favour. Page 76, 10.1. Councillor Brown. Moved. Councillor Brown. Second. Councillor Gordon. Councillor.
Thank you, Chair. This is a really good outcome. The lowest tender, significantly lower than some of the others, is the successful one. Also measuring up in terms of the non-price criteria, which is great to see. This is very important tender in terms of the security of our network and the safety of our water supply. Installing these devices in businesses will allow for the installation of more than 1,500 such devices, which is great to see. And the tender comes in at a low enough level that, as the report says, there'll be sufficient funds to cover the installation. So I'm happy to move the recommendation.
Councillor Gordon?
No, thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other speakers? Questions, General Manager? Halfway down page 76, it's on the third paragraph, last little sentence. The devices will be free issued to the smart metering installation contractor. Could you explain that? I think it's something that's valuable for the councillors to know. How are we going to roll this out?
Okay, sure, through the Chair. And Adam will correct me or add some if I miss any detail. So the previous term of council, we considered a review of backflow, and it was identified there was a whole range of opportunities to address backflow, and this is actually now starting to act on that. At the same time, council was considering the installation of smart metering within the region, and both of them in a normal situation outside at a property. So the decision was made to combine both of these projects together. So this is about buying the hardware, and we'll be issuing that to the contractor when they install the smart meter to install the smart meter as well as the backflow device. For any of the additional ones where we don't need to worry about a smart meter, we'll arrange for the installation separately. But 99% of it's all will be done together. So it just saves having multiple contractors and reduces cost.
I think it's everybody else. Any other speakers? Follow, Councillor. That motion and all those in favour? Gary? 104, 11.1, Code of Meeting Practice. Can I move it, please? Councillor Robb. Seconder? Councillor Gordon. Councillor Robb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I love my Code of Meeting Practice. They're my favourite thing in the world. And I think it's great that we've got the online access now, the Aboriginal Link access for councillors. I think it's exceptional. But I just wanted to ask a question about the one submission that we had, because I think it was, I think it actually refers to comments I probably made in the Noon Dam debate about reserving my right to speak and saying, talking about the rules of debate as the movement seconder. It says to give their reasons for so moving at that time. I just wanted to ask staff if there was any sort of response sent to that person or that organisation made those comments and talked about unfair treatment and breach of licensing and kind of being practiced. But it's what I understand. So councillors have got a right, if I have it correct, to reserve their right to speak or not to speak extensively on any topic, as we do all the time here. And I'm just hoping that that response can be sent to this organisation so they understand the code of meeting practice, and that moving and seconding an object doesn't mean we have to speak extensively on it because we read the stuff and everything like that, unless I'm missing something in the code of meeting practice that requires us to speak. So if that's possible, I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, I think the code of meeting practice is exceptional. We went through nice and easy here, and I think it should be adopted in all its glory with all the submissions made from staff and the public.
Could you answer if there has been a response?
I will refer to Warren, because Warren was looking after this.
Certainly the OLJ's position was that it's not the code of meeting practice, isn't supposed to be that prescriptive when it comes to debating motions and things like that. So it would have required a change to that mandatory provision. So it's probably more appropriate that they petition the OLG for that change rather than RAS for a change to our code of meeting practice.
Thank you, Warren. Have we responded back to the submission yet?
We haven't responded back to the Ballarat Society, but we can do so after the meeting, depending on what's resolved.
We'll provide a copy of the outcome of today.
I forgot to make a small comment. I'd be pleased to have a reply sent to the organisation. I think, in my experience, I think it's a fair question. I'm actually pleased that they've taken the time to read the code. They've had that question. I personally have never experienced someone reserve their right until this term of council. So if they've never seen it, if they've never experienced it, I accept their submission to that. I certainly don't agree that once the debate commences that your rights should be waived. I certainly don't agree with that, but I do agree with, I have received this submission.
Yeah, sorry for interrupting.
Councillor Broome was next.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment, but if there was another question.
No, it was a comment on that.
Yeah. Oh,
nobody else?
If you wish.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, the reason I use that is because I'm very active, as you know, in other council, and reserving my right means I may not want to talk on it, but I have a right, every council has a right to speak once on every item.
Certainly.
Right? So that's reserving the right is for that, and then I still have the right to reply, which is another right. So if I reserve the right, I'm saying I might want to speak later, but I might not. That's all it is, and I think that's what I'd like to explain to the people that made that submission, that it's not a trick. It's just I don't want to speak, but if I have to, I will. And it depends on what happens in the debate, and then I might even use the right to reply. So.
If I could comment, I fully understand that. Yeah. I've just never seen it used. Yeah. That's all. I've never seen it at all, ever. Yeah.
So the problem is that because in right to reply, it's supposed to be only what's been discussed. So if you reserve your right, if something else comes up that you want to say, you can say it. So technically, you can't bring in new stuff and write a reply.
Yeah, I fully understand.
Councillor Broome. Thanks, Chair.
I understand that debate.
Yeah. Just noting that the big change, if you like, in this new code is that it allows for councillors to attend meetings via audio-visual link. And it's a very well-written change. I commend the staff the way it's done, in that it doesn't just allow councillors to take that advantage lightly. The provisions for it are there. It actually has to come to the council, and there has to be good reason, and I think that's important, so that you can't sort of check out and start travelling the world and zooming into meetings. It's very well done, and I commend that.
Thank you. Councillor?
Councillor Bruin's comment then just reminded me of a question I had. Is there provision in there, because you do need to make an application in advance, and there's a specified period. However, we're living in a kind of COVID world which sees one's ability to attend meetings change very quickly. Have we left enough room for that to be a reason. I mean, I can't imagine that I would call you even if it was the night before and say, sorry, I've got COVID, but can I tune in? But the last meeting, I watched you all, but I wasn't able to participate because we didn't have this provision, and I wonder if now I would.
It's just, it's also, you could wake up in the morning with the flu and, like, way of the world is, you wouldn't want to come.
No.
You know, so if you could join by at home, I think there are things that really need to be.
So the question is to staff, does the code as it stands now allow for that?
And the way I see it through the chair is that we would begin the meeting and that would come as the first item on the agenda to approve joining in because of.
But it does.
So is that how I read that correctly?
Yeah.
Lauren, yeah. Would you like to make a comment on that? Just introducing Lauren as well through the chair is Lauren Edwards is our governance and risk manager.
Thank you, councillors. At the moment, you've got to provide the general manager with written notice that you need to attend by audio visual link. There's no particular time frame for that, but it needs to be determined as for the first order of business at the council meeting.
Thank you for that clarification. I have another question, if that's all right, Peter. I guess question/comment in relation to the submission that was made. So in relation to reserving the right, we use it regularly in Byron Shire Council meetings, but it's because we only have speakers for and against. And so if you only have speakers for and against, and there's nobody speaking against, well, then that person wouldn't have a chance to speak. But if you've reserved your right of reply, then you do still have an opportunity to speak. But we can't speak twice, and I'm interested in some more clarification around that because it is, but these meetings are fairly informal in reality, and you know, but that's how it, I think where it comes from is when you have speakers for and against, and you don't have that extra opportunity to speak again, speak if there isn't another one against. Coming back to the, I mean, it's interesting some of the things that are raised and some of them directed at myself and Councillor Lyon in relation to unfair treatment. And in one sense, I acknowledge that it was a very big item to come into a first meeting, and I think it would have been better for us to have had a first meeting that went through all the, you know, necessary perfunctory things and have that come to us. In saying that, no workshop or discussion would have, I think, changed the outcome of that voting. So I don't feel hard done by, even though that implication is that, you know, we were unfairly treated because, you know, that was, I guess, the premise that people really pushed for themselves to be on this. But so I just thought I'd just address that briefly. But I think it is great that we have people that care enough to go through and read these things, and I think it is very important that we do take the time and energy to reply. But I have noticed with the general manager, when I have had queries for people such as Ballina Environment Society or others, is really doing his best to make sure that they're well informed, and I think they appreciate it, and so do I and other councillors.
Well, we have.
Are you closing?
No, just a question about the accessibility and visual. So I understood it was like an apology at the meeting for future meetings. Now I'm wondering, because the order of the business, it is after the acknowledgement of the country, are we able to, if we can't make it to a meeting, can we apply in that meeting for that meeting? So to come online after that point three?
Yes, that's what I understand.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say, because like you mentioned being sick that morning, I thought it was for the next meeting. So that addresses that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's a good system, I think.
But if you're going to say you're sick, you better look sick.
There's other situations, for example, between meetings, you might have to travel to Sydney or something, and you can say, I had to travel, and that could be another reason. So.
Any other speakers? Councillor Robin, close.
Nothing to say.
Put that motion, all those in favour. 11.2 on page 150, Delegation General Manager.
Chair.
who do we have? Councillor seconder? Councillor Lyon? Councillor Catwalla?
Yes, just looking here, what really stands out to me is greater operational efficiency in awarding letting contracts. We've just had discussion about how difficult it is to get contractors, how decisions need to be made in a timely manner. And if it has to come back to a council meeting for some of these things, it can stagnate progress. And when I look here at, for example, Future Water Project 2060 and 22 flood recovery, these are the things that would be affected. Business continuity, particularly during periods when councils are unable due to natural disasters, pandemics, etc. So we're operating in different times now, and I think we've got to move with that, and we've got to address that. If the general manager's happy to take on that extra burden of responsibility, then we should support that. It still has to be reported back to council, so it's still open and transparent. Everything is here under scrutiny, the probity controls, everything here. So I believe that this is worthy of support for all the reasons I've just pointed out. So I think we should support it.
Councillor Lyon, second. Any other speakers? Just to follow up on Councillor Cadwallon there, if you see on bottom of page 50 that about the has to be reported back to the next available council meeting, I actually raised that because I think that going from $250 to $1 million is a lot of money.
It is.
And on page 155, it's actually in the, you can see it there, right down the bottom, it's in that policy. So very pleased that that's, yeah. Any other speakers? Aye. That motion then, all those in favour? Carried. 11.3, page 159.
Happy to move.
Seconder? Councillor Bruin? Councillor Cadwallon?
Yes, look, this is something that was fully embraced by the previous council. We really wanted this to happen, and we did our very best to make it happen. And unfortunately, like a lot of other things, the floods have really knocked it out to the point now where we just can't pursue this. So, as much an awful lot, I think the time has come that we just have to call it a day on this one. Yeah. It's probably all I'm going to say, I think.
That's fine.
Having not been on the previous council, I was a bit of a loss, I must say, as a member of the public to understand why Rouse Water was operating that centre in the first place. So I'm pleased to see that it's being wrapped up and that we can focus on our core activities.
Yes. Just after our very first meeting, I was lucky enough to go down with one of the staff members so that I could meet some of the people in relation to the Reconciliation Action Plan Working Group. And while I understand Councillor Bruin's reservations, what was happening there was actually really quite beautiful. You know, an education centre, a lot of Indigenous input, some exhibition space, and I think a really good interface between this council and the community. It's the location was very poor, obviously, in relation to flood risk, and that was a real shame. But I do hope in the future that we are able to replicate some kind of public interface that works like that, because, you know, education is so key when you're dealing with water, when you're dealing with weed management, pest management, when you're looking at the way people relate to and look after the land that we live on. And so in future, I do hope there is a place for something along these lines, but it was necessary after that devastation for it to be shut down. And but I don't understand that motivations behind doing it, and I think some great things were happening. That's a shame, but it is the reality that we are living in.
Yes, Gordon.
It is a shame. Like, Lismore plays a very big part in the Rouse picture. And Rouse is going to Ballina. We know that. Lansport, one day, moved out there. This was contact with the community in Lismore from an educational perspective, but also from that personal contact where people could engage with Rouse, I guess, and learn a bit more about the procedures and functions of Rouse and typically what they do. And I am very sad that the flood has changed the landscape. It's changed the landscape for a lot of people. And I get financially why you wouldn't continue on. But I also recognise that Rouse is about commitment. It's about commitment to the community. And we made a commitment to the community. And it's a shame that we've sort of reneged on that community because of an event. Now, the event changed a lot of things for a lot of people. But all those people are coming back. And we've just made the decision, I guess, to move on. And I get it, but I am disappointed.
Councillor Rowe?
Yes, I need to say something too, because with that decision of Rouse to move to Ballina, I took a lot of well-paid jobs out of Lismore and moved it to Ballina. So it's a benefit to Ballina, a lot for Lismore. So a lot of those people working here were spending money here. And like, if they didn't live here, they spent money on lunch and things like that, which is a lot of jobs gone. So that was a loss. And this is more jobs gone because there was a couple of people working there. I also, wearing my Rouse hat, understand the cost issues, the uncertainty, all that stuff. So for Rouse, it's a good decision. For Lismore, it's not a good decision, of course, but maybe we also were talking about putting the water treatment or testing facility, but having that SE to keep some jobs here, but I think that's gone too. But maybe one day Rouse can sort of have a satellite sort of thing happening in Lismore every now and then to get some presence and in the future. But I'm happy to support this as well on the basis of the cost and uncertainty to Rouse.
I could make
Councillor Humphreys.
Moving to Ballina, I understand that there is going to be a purpose-built, the intent for a purpose-built area there for demand management demonstrations. Well, this centre, it was actually going to be Rouse's core public consultation centre. Like, that was one of the main reasons to have it there. People could drop in and they could see demonstrations about weeds and demonstrations about flood, and that's what its main role was going to be. So I hope that the demand management area at the new building will work as well, but this is a real loss with us moving, and we've got to make up that, because that's what it was all about. Just being an absolute consultation and display area.
Councillor Morris.
Just briefly to add to those comments from the last few speakers, I agree this is a loss, and I think Rouse can afford it, actually, and I don't see that there's any particularly big financial imperative to shut this down. For me, it's a timing thing. We need to regroup at the moment, but I would in no way be sort of indicating that this is done and dusted now for the future. I see the value in it, and I think once we've regrouped, I don't see anything stopping us from restarting this project. And I see the value in it. I think it's good value for money for Rouse. And if we can partner with Lismore again, or Ballina, or somewhere else, logical for that engagement. I see the value in it.
I just want to mention that Councillor Cadwater and Humphreys, our previous councillors, myself, and we were very supportive of this. And I'm sorry to see it go. I thought it was a great outcome for Rouse, and also the Lismore community and the area around it. But Lismore had closed that tourist information centre, and we helped get it back going again. I don't think only for at Rouse they would have ever had tourist information. So we've done our part there. Maybe it could be revisited one day. But just at present, I don't believe it is a high priority for us. We have a lot of other needy things that had to be taken care of. And I'm not sure where Lismore's up to the building, neither. So if they make a decision in the future, maybe we could engage with them and have a talk to them. And it doesn't stop what we're doing in Ballina, but, you know, it's something that could happen. But yeah, Lismore's Light Rouse, there's so many other things that we have to attend to first. Any other speakers?
Thanks, Chair. I'm hearing there are more councillors. Obviously, you'd be disappointed, and you are disappointed that Rouse is moving to Ballina, but it was a commercial decision. It was a commercial decision, and one I'm sure that will reap the benefits of many years to come. The facility down there, the old tea tree plantation, had a wonderful educational centre there. It became TP Health, and that centre was used for the community. Quite a rainforest walk and just a lovely area. And I believe that's what we've got planned for that area, to be a real focus of education for demand management, for all sorts of things that we want to educate our community at. I can see that school days, busloads of kids will be able to visit the centre when we're there and got it fully functioning. I think there's wonderful opportunities for days out for kids and things like that. And we know that's where you have to start. You have to start with them when they're young to educate them. So, but I do get that. The decision about not moving forward with this is a commercial decision again. And it's something, as the Chair said, we don't have to forget that into the future. We can always look at things that might come back, and things can always change. But at this point in time, it's not a priority. We have to stick to our core business. We know what our priorities are. And I believe water for our communities, our four constituent councils that Rouse supplies, is a priority. And I think we have to stick to our priorities. I think Rouse is still committed. We have our big rainforest phase. We have things that we bring our communities together. We bring the cultures together. And we've all been out there recently and had a look out at the Rocky Creek Dam site of what's happened out there and how wonderful that landscape is. And I've been out there to some of those days and they're fabulous. So as much and all as the disappointment's there, anything can change in the future. And I think we will have that position down at the Gallons Road site to do wonderful things moving forward. I just don't know how quickly we can all make that happen. But hopefully we'll be able to do that sooner rather than later too. So thank you. That's all, Chief.
I'll put that motion. All those in favour? Carry.
I'm against it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So there you go.
6-4. I was for it.
Oh, four?
Oh, for it? Again.
I was putting my hand up for the next.
Oh. I looked down there and I thought, they're trying me for two votes. Sorry. Page 165, 12.1, and it's been moved to Councillor Rock. Seconder? Councillor Humphreys, Councillor Rob.
Yeah, it's just putting it out on display. I want to hear what people have to say, particularly about point four there in the recommendation, taking away the range charges and debts bit and just leaving it with the GM. Because it's different to the general purpose council, I'm not as concerned about it. But I just have to refer to Lismore. We're trying to get a debt management policy that's approved that hasn't been put in place yet. Get that up and running to deal with rates, fees and charges separately, because you can't waive
rates.
Write-off. That's what I was talking about. Can't waive or write-off those. You can only discount interest rates and pension discounts and things like that, and I'm assuming that all extends into here. So I'm interested in hearing how that comes back. And I'll probably have to keep an eye on that, because if it doesn't have any submissions, it won't come back to us. So is that how that's working here, isn't it? So, yeah, okay. So Yeah, well, it's just going on submission, so I'm interested to see what comes in. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Write a reply. A motion and all those in favour. 4.2, page 179.
Yes, I'm happy to hear that.
Another call mover of 4.2. Public interest to close your
we have to move it.
Oh, you've still
I need a mover.
Yeah, sorry.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Please second.
Oh. Yep. And second the councillor rule.
Okay, so there's
Councillor Cadwell.
Yeah, several minor amendments have been made. So pretty much it's just updated to reflect the current positions of the organisation structure. So nothing major there at all that I could find.
Any other speakers? Guess not.
I'm good, thanks. Okay.
No other speakers? Councillors, do you want to write a reply?
No, it's fine.
Put that motion in all those in favour. Carried. 12.3, page 194. That's it. Councillor Robb, seconder.
Yep.
Councillor Humphreys actually had a hand up first. Councillor Robb.
They're always happy to see good asset management and yeah, good policy. Thanks.
Oh, just adoption, as it says, will satisfy regulatory and audit requirements. So certainly, adopting the recommendation.
Any other speakers? Councillor Robb, close. Put that motion and all those in favour. 12.4 on page 209, payment of expenses and facilities policy.
Second.
Second, the Councillor Cadwallader.
Sound effects are impressive.
Councillor.
Look, I think, you know, the local government in this area has just been so far behind the eight ball. It's a disgrace that superannuation hasn't been paid to councillors for decades, and you know, we have councillors in our region who do this work for decades. We're sitting with one or two or three now. We all know that it's an honour and a privilege and a great service that we, you know, have to take very seriously. As representatives on our local councils. But I also don't believe that that should come to at a great cost to our overall well-being. It's such a small amount of money to come out of a council budget, whether it's a constituent council or this council, and yet over decades, it does make a difference. And so as small as that contribution may be, I'm really happy that it's finally here. I lobbied very hard for years to try and do it, to get it. I think, you know, particularly for women who are often very disadvantaged when it comes to superannuation, we need this to help bring the balance back when it comes to representation in local government, which still sits below 33%, which, you know, is a travesty. And for a lot of people that, you know, have extra caring responsibilities and do generally work part-time, we should be making this a more attractive possibility. Next step, I think, well, for councils particularly, is to actually recognise the work involved and have that paid remunerated more fairly. But I think in this instance, I'm grateful for this inclusion and that we're adopting this. As it is optional, councils do have the option to opt out of it, and I hope that everyone's in support.
Councillor Cadwallon.
Seconder?
Oh, look, I'll just endorse the comments that Councillor Sarah has just said. It's just unbelievable that we've been doing it all these years and it hasn't been included. So we are the lowest paid of all the council teams, if you like to call us teams, that exist within the council framework. And this is just a small way of showing that it's been recognised and now it's time.
Any other councillors? Councillor Rod?
Yeah, I just want to understand the professional development, the way that works, because I mean, I could spend 100 grand a year easily on education, professional development. And in Lismore, for example, there's a total amount that has to be shared amongst councillors, and I know there isn't here. It just says less than 2.5 or less than a record of 2,500. This is on page 216. Is general manager and above that is resolution of council, and I believe I'm probably going to bust that level this year. So I'm just trying to understand how we do that, and if there is a way to just have a resolution where there's a budget, annual budget, that's available to be shared amongst councils, and so we don't have to keep coming back if the councillor goes over that budget. If there's a way to simplify that process, so probably a question for the general manager.
So there is a total budget, is professional development of just 25 comes to mind. I might, or Jono, will double check the exact amount.
There is a budget allocated on a per council basis, but then put in the budget as
$2,500.
20 grand.
I just can't remember the exact.
Well, eight times 2.5. Yep. So I guess that's what it is.
I think we budget a little bit more than what the policy is. Okay. So
$3,500 per councillor is in the budget.
Yeah.
Sorry, say that again.
$3,500 allocation per councillor.
Per councillor.
Yep. 3,500 times eight.
Yeah. But we don't always, well, there's a couple of things here. So historically we don't spend it all. There's usually an under expenditure, and then there's also an arrangement that we've made with the general purpose councils. If there's an opportunity for professional development that both organisations benefit from, that we go a 50-50 split. So it's not, when you look at that, there's some things that the professional development that will get captured at the general purpose council that we get benefits. Code of conduct training, those types of things that we don't want to try and reproduce. So we do try to work in partnership with the constituent councils. We do bring a report back that has a summary. I'm just trying to remember the frequency.
It's a schedule that we put in each QBRS report. So once a quarter you get an update that just shows basically the various columns of spend that might have occurred per council.
And that's done by then resolution as well in terms of the acknowledgement of that expenditure. So we've got a couple of mechanisms already in place to provide that information to councillors.
Another little question. We've been dealing with this in our council around the carers' expenses. And obviously every council is going to have a very different makeup and needs in relation to that. Is that set at $1,000? Is there any flexibility in that? Or that's just because that's the only need you've had and yeah.
So in just through the chair, in relation to the setting of those thresholds, it reflected a little bit of the composition of council at the time and the expectation of draw on those particular values that have been identified there. Again, it is something for council to determine a position on. This particular policy will be subject to public consultation, so mechanism there for feedback to provided, and again to council, but that is a matter for council to determine and take a position on.
And it's out for 28 days, so it'll come back to a meeting. So if any councillors would like to have any changes or variants, that's quite able to occur at that pretty much.
I guess I'd just like that there'd be some discretion, with that, so that whoever may have caring responsibilities, their children or an elder or something, you know, doesn't necessarily have to bring it to council, other councillors. And we've had positions where someone's felt very embarrassed and, you know, hesitant to access that. I didn't even know that we had it. But then again, at this point in my life, I don't need it. But there was a time in my life where I had children at home and wouldn't have been able to do this kind of job if that wasn't available.
The position I'm in, I wouldn't know what budget would be required because I'm like you, I don't need it. So I wouldn't, the cost of hiring someone to care for your person you were caring for, I just would not. So I'd have to have guidance on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I could add to that if you like. I mean, I estimate my caring responsibilities will be about $2,000 a year. That's for two kids at home, or one depending on childcare and daycare and stuff. But that'll change as well as, you know, as they get older, you know, and they can go to school rather, or go to daycare rather than being specifically. So at the moment, I've got one at home with a babysitter right now. And if that remains for the next 12 months, it'll be about $2,000 for me. So
I think that feedback needs to go to this, so you can order the policy too. So it can cover, you know, you could be looking after your mum or your dad, you know, and things like that.
Yeah, it's broad and stuff like that.
Yeah,
on that front, I'm a carer for my elderly mother who now requires quite extensive care. And I would estimate it would be in the vicinity to attend these meetings and workshops probably close to $2,000 a year.
So I think that's something we need to take on board in the policy.
So based on that, a more reasonable number would be probably closer, if we don't want to cut it to the dollar, so I was thinking 2.5, but 5. And councillors can give us some guidance now. We can put that as part of the draft when we put it in policy.
I would say 5 with the discretion of the general manager rather than it having to come to council for discussion.
I don't think it really needs to come to council. I think the general manager, he's got a lot of delegations on a lot of bigger items.
Yeah, you could do $1 million, I reckon. So we're saying $1,000. If we doubled it to 2? No, I'm moving it and I'd move it at 5.
Why? Why
not each?
No, not each, as a whole.
The whole 5 in the pocket.
If I may, the gentleman has already got $5,000 discretion on most things on that, like that. So if discretion up to $5,000 is...
Yeah.
Well, the whole at the moment is 8. Because if it's per council, 1,000.
It doesn't have the little V next to it that means that it's per.
Is it greater? That's a greater than.
Yes, so through the chair at the moment, the proposal is that we retain the monetary limit that we have had in place for the last 5 years, which is 1,000 per councillor.
Right.
Per
so
you make it.
That's what I was going to cut. Can we make it to 2,000?
Mm.
Yes. Do you have to budget that in if we do it to 5 to make it 40?
It's going to be 2 per councillor, so that'll double.
That'll
so make it 16. Adjust, you'll find the budget.
We can do that.
Okay, all right. Happy
And
look, thank you for raising that because I had no idea. You know, I've never needed it, fortunately.
So just to understand, so when you say raise it to 2, so the budget allocation will be 16 total. So for those of us who don't use it, it can be moved across to those who need it. Is that what can happen?
No.
Or do you have to apply after 2? So I think the issue was they do spend 2, but it will go up.
So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, was to increase the $1,000 to $2,000, and instead of it coming back to the councillors, if there was it was a discretion of the general manager to work with the councillor if they're getting close to that $2,000 budget within the 12 months. Yep, that was my take home of the conversation.
Yeah, as long as they don't have to get embarrassed and come to council.
Yeah. Thanks,
so that changes to 2,000. That's the only changes policy before we go to the position. Any other speakers?
I think so.
Councillor Rodwick.
Look, councillors, thank you. And you know, it just goes to show just one little question and what that can open up for us shows as a group where we're kind of better as a whole than we are as a bunch of individuals because I read over that. You know, late last night and it didn't really pick it up, but once we're here in the room, I think that's really important. I want to make sure that people who do have caring responsibilities don't feel impeded by that. to participate in local government and governance, and I also am grateful that there is a spend available for us to all improve. The unfortunate thing is because we do get paid so as council laws generally, and not this isn't to do with Ralph, but such a small amount, ours is about 20 grand a year before with no super, and then you've got to pay tax on that. It means that you've got to work a lot outside of this job. So for me, finding the time to spend that $2,500 on education is actually really hard because I work every day. I'm not at council. But I'm grateful that it's there and happy that I have a chance to use that. It would be great if we got notified. I know from council we get notified when courses, relevant courses are coming up. I haven't seen that happen here, but I may have missed it because sometimes my email goes down. But I think, you know, as those things, opportunities come up through the Office of Local Government, it would be really good to get relevant courses made available to us. And, yeah, really happy that the superannuation is being included and adopted by this council, and thanks to the councillors for that support as well.
I just clarify that there has been some courses sent out, and we've had councillors from this council send those.
Right, so that's just my trouble with the authentication on my email. I'm missing, and I have to get that sorted.
So we just haven't historically published every course that's come through, but we can.
I don't know, just once you think that are relevant. No, the conferences are different to the Office of Local Government runs, you know, courses around better understanding training.
Yeah.
That's what I thought that this is specifically for, or is this for?
It can be for both.
Right.
When it comes to that, or so when it comes to the OLG, we make the assumption that council has already received that through their general purpose council, and then we provide opportunities that are rouse, like the water conference or any other those types of things.
Correct.
Instead of the we just try to balance not duplicating things because we know the GPs do a lot of that as well.
Excellent.
No, just to say the one I'm going to next week. Is the great executive certificate for elected members. It's like an expensive, it's $3,500 and travel each, it's in two blocks, $1,000 each time. So just one course like that, like this is why I was asking about the amounts, but it's being split across Lismore and Rouse. So, I mean, that course I went looking for myself because I knew it was out there, but it was off for 2 years. And you can apply and ask, will you fund it? And then us both councils, both GMs say yes, and you'll pay for it up front, get reimbursed or whatever. But so you don't have to just see what's being sent to you. If you find, like I did a bomb meteorology masterclass, which is exceptional. And I thought I'd recommend that to everyone. And it helps me really understand what I'm looking at now when it comes to trying to work out what's going on with rain and everything like that. So just so you know, you can find your own courses.
Thank you.
Everyone related.
Well, that closes the debate and put that motion 4.4. Those in favour? Unanimous. 4.5 on page 223.
Second.
Councillor Cashman, the second. Councillor Rob. Councillor Rob. Councillor.
Oh, no, he called you.
Yes. Council have one new movement.
Oh, right. No, I haven't got anything here that I need to ask questions about. I think it's all pretty straightforward. So happy.
The councillor? No right reply? No. That motion and all those in favour? Carried. 4.6 on page 246, related party disclosure policy review. Councillor Cadwaller, the seconder. Councillor Lyon. Councillor Cadwaller.
when this first came out, they can't be serious. We have to put every member of our family. And then we realised, of course, no, we didn't have to do that. It's only those that have connections to my pages of every member of the family. I was pleased to see that I had a nil disclosure. So, yes, just happy to move it as is.
Councillor Rob.
Just a question on this. I just got asked to fill it out for Liz Law, and I'm a director of a number of companies, and it turns out I thought I had nothing to disclose, so I sort of query why we have this when it's exactly the same disclosures I made in the council disclosures. I just have to rewrite the directorships of the companies on another form and then do a second form to say there was no nil, what do they call them? Related party disclosures. So, is there a way we could just do this to match the council disclosures we already made so we're not in breach? Or do we have to actually fill these out each time?
Have we got some?
I'll take the opportunity to suggest that we can always go back and look and see if there's any administrative things that we can do to streamline off something else that's already provided by councillors. it's a fairly routine a process that we go through annually in terms of finalising the financial statements. So it's a disclosure that's quite related to the obviously been in existence to allow us to facilitate the financial statements composition and audit, but I'll take another chance to have a look at there's an opportunity to use your other disclosures that you do through the council that we could apply for the statements.
Just on that, so Rouse, you've got my disclosures from this morning, because they were the same for here. But there's absolutely my reading of this, if I have one of these, I have to put it into the disclosures there already. So is this, why are we doing this double up? Like, is this a statutory requirement?
This is to comply with the Australian Accounting Standards. Yeah. Yes, and it is to talk about the governing people or the responsible people of the organisation and embedded inside the financial statements any disclosures of related party transactions. So for that purpose, the accounting standards and disclosure.
Thank you.
Any other speakers? Questions? Councillor Cadwallon.
No. Thank you.
Motion and all those in favour. Page 258, 13.1, information reports. Councillor Rob. This is all the reports.
Aren't they great reports? I just really want to thank the staff on that. It's things are perspective, doesn't it? Look at that, how we're tracking, and it's just great to see that dam 100% full and Emigrant Creek. Fantastic. We can't always expect it to be that way, of course. I really haven't got too many questions. I don't think I've got any, in fact. No. It's great to get these reports and see how we're tracking with the investments with everything else that we're doing. Yeah, so thank you.
Councillor Rob, anything? No. Any other councillors on the report? Council, I just want to, it's not a query, but I just want to bring your attention to page 273, the Rocky Creek Dam, the levels.
Yep.
And you can clearly see flood one and flood two, how it really peaked over the spillway and how long it was actually over the spillway or, you know, at a great height. But I just, and then you look at the other two lines, the yellow one, that's 01/02, how it's gone down from almost being full. And then the brownie one is 02/03 and how that drought kept going and how fast it refueled. It's just amazing the area we live in and how it can fluctuate. And yeah, it's amazing actually. So I just found it interesting. So,
councillors, Dr. Stale in Brooklyn.
Yeah, we're off here, sorry, we're off the scale. You
can clearly see the gap between. Yep.
Sorry, what was there two spots? Was that because the rain bomb first one, rain bomb second one?
Yeah.
What they call one?
Yeah. Like that. You have been to that course.
I don't like the term, but it's scary for people, so if you say rain bomb.
All right, Councillor Cadwallon, want to close? No. Is that motion and all those in favour? Harry? What are we on? Oh,
confidential.
I had something for that, but I'll look for them later. I just missed something. I'll let you know in reports pending. The last one on page 307, it's about the Richmond Valley Council update of the report for the Tuckerbull Canal. We're actually, like a lot of other councils, we're recalibrating our butt heights, just had our study ready to go. And, yeah, so that's going to be hopefully by Christmas. Sorry? Councillors, we're now on page 308. I need a mover to go into closed council.
Page 308.
Is that well enough? Second, Councillor McGuire.
Much easier than what you
said. Councillors, we're voting to go in closed committee. All those in favour?
Just a second.
Councillors, we're back. Right, Councillors, we're back online. I'll ask the general manager to read the motion.
No, excuse me.
That council receive and note the information provided and adopt option 3 as recommended in the report.
That closes the meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance. It was a big agenda, but we got through it in not too bad a time. So thank you very much, and everyone have a safe trip home.
Thank you. Thanks.